It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Making things is hard, whether it's a picnic table, a podcast, or an animated film. It's hard to make anything that is of good quality. It's a universal human struggle. Now, I don't think that anyone can match Disney in terms of quality or longevity. However, not even Disney is exempt from putting out a dud every once in a while. Today, we're digging into the absolute worst thing that Disney has ever produced. Fingers crossed that I don't get sued this time. My name is Josh, and this is Obscure History. We all love Disney, right? I know that I do. Especially right now, they have been on a roll. Onward, Soul, Raya and the Last Dragon, and Luca. I mean, those are all great films. Especially Soul. If you haven't watched it yet, I implore you to do so as soon as possible. And that's not even mentioning their extended properties like The Mandalorian and WandaVision. It's actually insane to think about how big Disney is and how effectively they have monopolized our entertainment. Oh, you like Pawn Stars? Thank Disney for that show. Was that a nice Lifetime Christmas movie? Thank Disney for that too. I mean, they've got their fingers in everything. But when we look at the world through the Disney lens, it's more like a funhouse mirror rather than a telescope. One of Disney's go-to moves is to take a piece of reality, stretch it out, warp it, and reflect it back to us in a sort of caricature of what it started out as. The original Cinderella did not need the help of a fairy godmother, and instead planted a twig on her mother's grave and watered it with her tears, until it bloomed into a magical tree that would give her any item she wished for. Also, pigeons pecked out the eyes of the wicked stepsisters, which is probably reasonable to omit from the family-friendly version. In the original Little Mermaid by Hans Christian Andersen, the protagonist, who has no name in his version, kills herself in the end and dissolves into seafoam. Again, that seems like maybe something that could be left out of the version for the kiddos. Similarly, Pinocchio was originally like a harrowing adventure tale. Before he got the Disney treatment, he was nearly used as firewood, hung from a tree by assassins, sentenced to 4 months in prison, chained on a dog leash, nearly eaten by fishermen for some reason, turned into a donkey, sold as a donkey to have his skin turned into a drumhead, tied to a stone and tossed to the sea, still as a donkey, where he was then swallowed by a giant shark. I mean, that's pretty dark. So, I mean, it seems like Disney is just taking the dark parts out and making it a little shinier for the children, right? Actually, no. There's a more insidious element of this Disney treatment that really needs to be investigated. Sometimes Disney stretches history through its funhouse mirror, and you know that that presents a historiographical dilemma that I am absolutely all about. So sometimes these inaccuracies are mostly innocent. For example, in the movie Dinosaur, the little baby dinosaur is raised by a family of lemurs, which is totally impossible. But that's not really a big deal, right? There's also that time at the end of Sleeping Beauty where Aurora and Philippe dance. It's a great scene, But his hand is on her back, which would have technically been like a major faux pas for the time period. Again, nitpicky, not really that big of a deal. Like I said, though, those were the innocent inaccuracies. Disney's Aladdin features protagonists, Aladdin, Jasmine, and Genie, who all seem to have perfect American accents, while the villains, like that one guard with the giant scimitar and Jafar, have more Middle Eastern accents. Further, the film conflates a ton of different regions and cultures, and makes some pretty negative generalizations about Islam. I mean, have you ever wondered how Aladdin is simultaneously set in the Sahara Desert and India? Maybe this seems pedantic, like, why does it matter that Disney didn't make a historically accurate version of Aladdin? I don't have an area of expertise, per se, but if I did, I would like to think that it is answering this very specific, pointed question. History has a lot of definitions, and the answer you get will depend on the context of the question and who is giving you an answer. Some people will argue that history is merely the study of historic texts. That's fine. Others will argue that it's anything that happened before today, something that I've said before, and that's fine in some contexts too. Some people will argue that history is only the meaningful past, that is to say, the things that happened before today that have some sort of observable effect on our present. Again, this definition is fine too. But today, I argue that history is any representation of the past in any medium. Ancient Aliens is a representation of the past. By my definition, it is therefore a work of history, and it's complete trash that diminishes the important role of non-European people in our human tapestry. The Oregon Trail video game, especially the new one on the Apple Arcade, is a representation of the past, which, again, under my definition, makes it a work of history. And it's actually pretty good, and it's helpful for teaching younger students the history of the Oregon Trail. Aladdin is a representation of the past, which makes it a work of history, and works of history inform our present perception. There is actually a reason that Aladdin wasn't historically accurate. Remember how Aladdin is in a sort of North African, Middle Eastern, South Asian mashup world? Aladdin was supposed to be set in Baghdad, like the original story, but when it was in production, the United States entered the Gulf War. And Disney art director John Musker said, "We kept it in Baghdad in our first treatment, and then the Gulf War happened. The first Gulf War. Roy Disney said, this can't be in Baghdad, so I took the letters and did a jumbled anagram and came up with Agrabah." Essentially, Disney twisted history so that we would sympathize less with the enemy. That's why history matters, and that's why I strongly encourage you to treat any representation of the past as a work of history, because even if it doesn't seem like it, there may be an actual reason why things are being depicted the way that they are. As egregious as that historical distortion is, it is not the worst Disney has done. Not at all. In 1995, Disney completely warped one of the most important moments in American history, and as we untangle the truth, we are going to realize that we desperately need to rethink the way that we study and teach history. This is the truth about Pocahontas. A cool mist settles below a canopy of chestnut and oak trees, stretching like green fingers to feel the sun's embrace. A group of women huddle near a creek as the tumbling water mixes with shouts of pain as one of the women presses her eyes tight. She grinds her teeth and with every ounce of willpower she has, she pushes, desperately trying to usher her child into the world. Her struggle has been long. Her body is wearing down. The other women encourage her and stand by with medicine prepared for the occasion. With one last push, the woman looks down to see her beautiful baby girl lying in a bed of leaves, welcomed into existence by Mother Earth. She's perfect. Her skin is so smooth. A swath of black hair twirls on her scalp. The baby's eyes open and the woman feels an unseen cord connect their hearts. She smiles. She reaches a hand down toward the precious little girl, but something doesn't feel right. The woman's body feels lighter, and there's blood mixing in the earth below. Too much of it. As the child's tiny hand wraps around the woman's pinky finger, she collapses. The women who are watching rush to see her aid. Their balms of peat moss and water pepper could not heal the wounds fast enough. Rays of sunlight dance off the baby's eyes as it slips away from her mother's. The baby was swaddled and taken back to Wahun Sanaka, the paramount chief of the Powhatan, the man whose strength and wisdom led 10,000 men, the ultimate authority in Senakomaka. When the woman offered the child to him and gave their condolences, he wept. His heart broke over the loss of his beloved, but her spirit would live on in their daughter. He named her after her mother. Wahun Sanaka would lead the Powhatan with wisdom, compassion, and strength, with his daughter Madawaka at his side the entire time. As the little girl grew, her sense of wonder and excitement about the world around her would earn her the nickname Pocahontas, the Playful One. While you might not see her on a Disney princess lunchbox, the truth is that Pocahontas was as royal as Ariel, Jasmine, Merida, or Tiana. But before we get too far, we need to stop, have a palate cleanser, I know that was kind of heavy, and pay some bills. For about 1 minute, I'm going to run some ads, and then we're going to jump right back into this story, and I promise it's not going to be quite as depressing when we get back to it.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, we're back. So there is a ton to unpack here. Honestly, I could write like 20 pages about this stuff. Actually, I kind of did. It's not really groundbreaking or anything, but a lot of the history in this episode came up in my capstone project, so I'm going to try and be concise, but this is probably going to end up being a two-part series. Something that we have a really poor grasp of today is how Native American society was structured. By no means am I an expert or a Native person, but this is important for us to understand to the best of our ability. Most of the time, Native Americans had complex social structures. Many of us sort of assume that Native people existed in small tribes, and those tribes were completely independent of each other. But that's not true at all. Here's a great example. You can research the Oglala people if you want. And some people might know the Oglala by themselves, sort of totally in a vacuum. But get this. The Oglala are one of the seven bands of the Lakota. That's probably a pretty familiar name, right? Now, the Lakota are also part of the Oseti Sakowin, or the Seven Councils of Fire, along with other groups you might know like the Sioux and Dakota. They're all connected in this really complex civilization, which spanned thousands and thousands of miles. Similarly, if we look at native language groups, things get even more interconnected. I am definitely not a linguist, but if we look at the Athabascan language group, we see people speaking Athabascan languages from the tip of Alaska down to the southern border of Texas, and everywhere in between. While I am not equipped to give you the full history of the Athabascan language group, it would stand to reason that if people speak a similar enough language in Texas as in Alaska to be classified together by linguists, there had to be some interconnected societal structures somewhere in their past. Right? This is true of the Powhatan as well. Pocahontas's father, Wahun Sanaka, was the paramount chief of the Powhatan Confederacy, which was an alliance of about 30 native groups in the land that is currently called Virginia. Within the Powhatan Confederacy, Wahun Sanaka and the paramount chiefs before and after him would designate werowances, or sub-chiefs among the tribes in the Confederacy. This hierarchy naturally filtered things up to the paramount chief so that they were not bothered by petty problems that could be handled by others. The paramount chief ruled from a central location and made the biggest and most important decisions that affected the entire Confederacy. As the daughter of the paramount chief, Pocahontas may have lived a slightly more privileged life than her contemporaries, but she would still have had to learn all of the essentials. The Jamestown National Parks website has a great breakdown of what she would have had to have learned to be a functioning adult in the Powhatan Confederacy. They say, "Women's work was separate from men's work, but both were equally taxing and equally important, as both benefited all of Powhatan society. As Pocahontas would learn, besides bearing and rearing children, women were responsible for building houses, which they may have owned. Women did all of the farming, the planting, the harvesting, the cooking, preparing and serving of food, the collecting of water which was needed to cook and drink, the gathering of firewood for fires. They made meals for the houses, both inside and out. They made baskets, pots, cordage, wood spoons, platters, and mortars. Women were also the barbers for the men, and would process any meat that the men brought home, as well as tanning the hides to make clothing." Another important thing Pocahontas had to learn to be an adult woman was how to collect edible plants. As a result, she would need to identify the various kinds of useful plants and have an ability to recognize them in all seasons. All of the skills it took to be an adult woman, Pocahontas would have learned by the time she was about 13, which was the average age Powhatan women reached puberty. However, before Pocahontas could finish her education, there would be a seismic shift in Powhatan culture. As Pocahontas and the other girls and boys in the Powhatan Confederacy were learning how to be contributing members of society, an unexpected visitor was landing on the Atlantic shores, and nothing would ever be the same because of it. On April 26th, 1607, a group of English settlers under the command of Captain Christopher Newport made landfall on the shore of what is today called Virginia. A few months previous, they had set sail from England under the direct instruction of King James I, who desperately wanted to cash in on the fortunes of the New World. King James had been standing by as Spain raked in the gold hand over fist from this mysterious new continent. Feeling the pull of jealousy and the fear of falling behind the European political race, he sent 3 ships worth of settlers to North America's Atlantic coast. These settlers were mostly well-to-do aristocrats and their manservants who wanted to capitalize on the legendary riches they had heard so much about. They came fully equipped to mine for gold. However, this plan was severely misguided. Not only did these aristocrats not have any survival experience, but there wasn't even any gold to find. To make matters worse, the settlers decided to establish Jamestown in a boggy lowland plagued by mosquitoes and undrinkable, murky water. Also, 2/3 of the settlers died on the ship in transit to the New World, and they had landed during the worst drought in 700 years. There was not much to go around, and they had no idea how to utilize the land. The colony would have been doomed from the very start if it weren't for the Powhatan people and the leadership of one man who has been forever enshrined in history by Walt Disney, John Smith. John Smith was a seasoned adventurer, and by adventurer I mean hired mercenary and part-time pirate. After his father died when he was only 16, he set off to carve his own path. And it turns out his path was dictated by whoever would pay him to kill and explore. He killed the Spanish in the name of the French. Then he killed the Spanish in the name of the Dutch. After that, he killed the Turks in the name of the Austrians. And when that gig dried up, he continued killing the Turks, but this time in the name of the Romanians. There is no doubt that John Smith was a man of questionable morals, but his survival skills were more than fit for the job of sailing across the sea to start a new colony for King James. Once he realized the dire situation the fledgling colony found itself in, he snapped into action and took control. He famously forced his fellow colonists to work by introducing one simple law: "He that will not work shall not eat." He also used his survival skills to range around the area and map what he found. Smith's maps would provide useful not only for the residents of Jamestown, but many settlers to follow. He also recorded much of his time in the colony, and a lot of what we know about Jamestown and early English colonization actually comes from John Smith himself. Despite his best attempts, though, the colony still needed help, and they found that help in the Powhatan people. And this is where history becomes truly complicated. According to Smith, relations with the Powhatan were tense. And I imagine that they were, to some degree. There must be a sort of apocalyptic feeling when two completely unrelated groups of people come into contact for the first time. It seems reasonable to think that both parties were skeptical and curious about the other's intentions. However, despite whatever trepidation was felt initially, the two groups developed a symbiotic trade relationship. Famously, in 1607, John Smith says he was captured by one of Chief Wahoon Sanaka's brothers and was taken back to the Paramount Chief. According to Smith, he was prepared for an execution ritual. His head was placed between two stones, and a Powhatan warrior held a large club aloft, preparing to smash it down into his brains. That is, until a mysterious girl ran out of the shrubbery and threw herself upon him, sparing his life. According to Smith, he was then released from his captivity and trade relations greatly improved between the English and the Powhatan. By 1608, the English regularly visited Powhatan tribes to trade tools, beads, and miscellaneous supplies for food, mostly corn. At the advice of his Quiqueros, who acted as advisors, spiritual leaders, and historians of the Powhatan people, Paramount Chief Wahoon Sanaka approved of these relations and is said to have ordered the Powhatan Confederacy to befriend the English, believing them to be less dangerous as an ally than an adversary. This symbiotic relationship would only last for about a year, though, as the worst year of the drought came swiftly in 1609. The English began demanding more, and the Powhatan had less to offer. As a result, the Powhatan turned inward and began protecting what little resources they had, and the English began to act more desperately. The once peaceful and productive relationship would erupt in skirmishes and battles and hostilities as the English settlers began invoking Sir George Peckham's Law of Arms, which allowed the taking of foreign lands by force, and his Law of God, which enjoined Christian rulers to settle those lands for the establishment of God's word. What came next is mired in misinformation, historical mythology, and Disney's corrupting fairy dust. Pocahontas would indeed be in the center of the Jamestown story, but almost certainly not in the way you're imagining. Next week, we're going to unravel the true story of Pocahontas, and in doing so, we're not only going to challenge the story we've been told since our childhood, but we're going to rethink the way that we study and teach history at an academic level. And it's all thanks to the life and death of Pocahontas. Alright guys, I'm going to end this episode right here. It is 117 degrees. The room that I'm recording in does not have an air conditioning. I am so sweaty, I cannot see through my glasses, and I cannot use the trackpad on my MacBook anymore. I know that's horrifyingly disgusting, and I'm sorry that you had to hear it, but it's just the truth. Now, to close us out today, we've got Midday Static with their song Summertime Skyline. It is really, really good. You know what it's really like? It's kind of like an ambient, I'm have heat stroke currently. It's kind of like an ambient, indie rock. It's really, really good for study music. I've listened to a lot of Midday Static stuff, specifically when I'm reading long books and just kind of need something in the background. Super good, super calming, evocative. I really, really like it. And I hope that you check them out. I'm going to drop a link to their stuff in the episode description. I'm going to try to be better at that. Speaking of dropping things in the episode description, I really want you to check out Earbuds Podcast Collective. the person that runs it, Ariel Nissenblatt, just like this and that, she's like an all-star, guys. Seriously, if you have a podcast or if you just want to keep up with podcast news, follow her on Twitter. I'm going to leave a link in the description to their newsletter. It is not only full of great podcasting news, but also recommendations to big shows, small shows, I mean, all across the board. Ariel will keep you in the know about what's going on in the podcast world. So, all right, guys, I think I'm going to actually die. So I'm going to see you next week when we finish the amazing story of Pocahontas, if I don't literally die right now. Okay, you guys have a nice week. See you later.
Thank you.